Greetings and good evening, everyone. Welcome to the Mark Fraley Podcast. This is your host, Mark Fraley. Today is June 1st, 2017, a sunny and warm day here in Nashville, Tennessee. Today I have the good fortune to sit down with my good friend, Kathleen Williams. Kathleen has played a very important role in the conservation of the natural environment here in Tennessee over the last 30 years. Kathleen led the legislative charge, which in 1991 resulted in the passage of the Parks and Recreation Partnership Act. This act, together with the companion legislation, provided stable funding for projects having to do with the acquisition of rare and endangered places. It also provided for stable funding for local government parks and recreation facilities throughout the state. She was the founder of the Tennessee Parks and Greenways Foundation, and she continues to serve in an advisory capacity with that organization. I wanted to get together with Kathleen to capture her memories of how this landmark legislation was passed and to hear some stories about its successes. I sure hope you'll enjoy my interview with Kathleen. Well, and greetings to my guest, Kathleen Williams. Kathleen is a person I've known for going on 30 years or more, I suppose.
Yes.
We've been through some wars together, haven't we?
We have.
Yeah. Kathleen, my listeners will not know you or anything about you. Tell us where you're from and what you're up to.
My name is Kathleen Williams, and I'm retired, semi-retired, from a career in land conservation. Right. I'm from East Tennessee, Sevier County, where I know you've spent a little time.
Right.
I grew up in Seymour, a little bedroom community of Knoxville now,
right.
But it used to be the country. And my parents are both native Tennesseans and deep roots on the Cumberland Plateau.
Okay.
Which is really...
Where on the plateau?
My dad is from Anderson County.
Okay.
Which Oak Ridge is
and
Anderson
Clinton
County.
And
but
those areas.
Place yeah. You may never have heard of, Briceville, Tennessee.
No, I've never heard of Briceville.
And it's a coal mining town.
Okay.
And thank God he
was
called to
get
out of there. And because it just, you know, coal mining... shut down, and my dad moved. He could live anywhere because he was a gospel singer. I don't know if you knew that.
No, I did not know that.
And a famous gospel singer in Whistler. And
oh
so
goodness.
he was on the radio in Knoxville and all over the country, really. And anyway, he could live anywhere, and so he chose to live in Sevier County because it's
true.
So beautiful.
I've learned something new about you that I
yeah.
didn't know. That's
and then my mother's family was... they had a coal mining history too. My grandfather was a mine inspector, and my mom grew up in Sparta,
okay.
which is in the middle of the plateau, one
yeah.
of the most beautiful areas
oh, yeah,
of the state.
Yeah,
you know, I just
place.
And I didn't know it growing up very well, but in my job, I got to spend a lot of time where my grandfather tromped around, and I just feel so fortunate to have gotten to come back and work at places where
so you went
I have
to
roots.
UT to college.
I only went 1 year.
Okay.
And then I came to Nashville and hung out with a songwriter and spent my college money. And then I went traveling.
Okay.
And so I'm a rare, probably, success story for somebody who didn't get my degree.
Okay.
No. I did attend some night school when I got to Nashville some, but I got lucky and... was hired, this is really strange, in cable television. And I didn't even hardly watch television or believe in watching television, but I was one of the first people hired in cable TV. The longer version of this story is that I waited a lot of tables after I went traveling for the first, with my college money. And I decided I never wanted to wait tables again. So I did, at the old age of 19, I took homemakers back to work and learned how to type. And I went down to the adult school at Hume Fogg. It was a technical
okay.
school, and sat hooked up to some earphones and practiced typing for a couple hours a day until I got really fast. And then I got hired by the cable TV company, and then before you know it, I was marketing manager. Which is interesting because I...
Here in Nashville.
Okay. And it was, I was like the 36th person hired, and they ended up having several hundred employees. So I just kept getting promoted. I'm a hard worker. And
right.
I like to think I'm a hard worker because I'm motivated by conservation, but I was actually a pretty hard
worker. You're a hard worker wherever you land.
Wherever I land.
And so, I think that I first met you right after you had left that particular job.
Yeah, the sad part of this story is that my dad got sick with liver cancer.
Oh no!
And he died at age 60. And when he got sick, I quit that job and went home. And I didn't move from Nashville. I wanted to make sure that I didn't get stuck in taking care of my mother for 30 years, or okay. You know, being her support. So I just sublet my apartment, went home for 6 months, and was there when he died. And when I came back is when I took the job with TRPA, the Tennessee Recreation and Parks Association. And that was on purpose. I tried to get a job with the Nature Conservancy, and they would not. It's one of the few times I couldn't get hired because I didn't have a degree.
Right.
But they wanted a degree person to fundraise, and I would have been a hell of a fundraiser for them. But they wouldn't hire me, and that's where I wanted to go to work. But I saw a little ad in the paper for Tennessee Recreation and Parks Association. I thought, oh, that has to be a land conservation group. And it really wasn't.
No.
But you and I sort of turned it into one.
Yes. Well, they aspire to do those sorts of things, but as a practical reality, it's a professional organization.
Yeah.
And you were, I don't know if you were technically the very first executive director. We had a couple volunteer executive directors of that organization. I think we had one paid one who lasted about 6 months.
That's it. Yeah.
And then that we got you going.
Yeah. And the organization started in 1952.
Right.
And I was hired in 86.
Right.
And I was the second ever paid director, and it was just after that other guy had been there for a little bit.
Right.
You had a very good volunteer, I understand, from Australia or somewhere.
Yeah, Margaret Seedsman.
Yeah.
If you're listening, Margaret, you did a wonderful job. She was a volunteer. She was here visiting the U.S. Her husband was working, and she was not permitted to work, so she came to work for TRPA, which was an amazing thing.
Yep.
Because she got things pretty well organized.
Yep. And so I started off on a pretty good foot because she had left it in good shape, and then I met you. And I don't know if you remember this, but you and I started working on a foundation almost immediately called the Educational Foundation, which we created.
Right.
And I remember sitting around a table and us trying to invent the purpose and the budget and what we would try to get accomplished. And
actually,
I think it's still up and running.
It is. The Tennessee Parks and Recreation Educational Foundation.
Yep.
I remember filing the charter of that group.
Yeah.
Which gives grants to students who are studying in parks and recreation and to professionals who want some additional money for their continuing education, I guess, is
mm-hmm.
what they do. Is that right?
Yeah. I think so.
Yeah,
and it's been a few years, but
right.
I just want to say that I'm not certain that I felt like it was ever a good fit with me and TRPA,
okay.
You know, working as director. But the most valuable thing that happened to me in my career happened there, and it was meeting you.
My goodness.
And it was getting going with the legislation that since has protected 300,000 acres in Tennessee.
Well, that's why we're here to talk about and
yeah.
the history of that. And,
yeah.
I remember that initially you worked, the TRPA offices were actually shared offices with the Tennessee Conservation Department. And that stopped.
Very quickly.
At the end of the Alexander administration, the new administration just didn't think that was the right way to go. So you ended up moving into space that our good buddy Charlie Howell provided to the organization.
Mm-hmm.
And not soon after that, it was 1986, as I recall, that the fish and wildlife type people got some money dedicated for preserving wetlands.
Yep.
Which was money that came into the coffers of the state from the real estate transfer tax. And everybody's bells were ringing about, wow, this is a creative way to raise some dedicated money. And some of us started talking about maybe we need to do this for Parks and Recreation as well.
In about 1990.
Yeah.
Maybe even 89, because it took us 2.5 years to pass it.
Yeah, I think the final bill passed in 91.
Yes.
But it was money that was dedicated to acquisition of land for city and county parks. There was another special portion of it that had to do with historic sites. And
State parks
and archaeological sites.
And agricultural grants. Which is an interesting part of the story.
Okay.
For our listeners, Mark originated this idea of starting the local parks fund. That's the way I remember it.
Right.
And I jumped all over it because I just thought it was the greatest idea to get more parks started everywhere in Tennessee.
Right.
And so the first thing we did was we went to see the wetlands folks that had the existing fund and said, let's remove the sunset. That wetlands fund was created for the Wildlife Agency to only last for 10 years.
Okay.
And it was due to sunset in 96. So the first thing we did was we went and asked them if we could remove the sunset.
Right.
And they said, well, you can try. And so this was like 90 or 91.
I can see Gary Myers saying, oh, that'll be all right.
Yeah. And he said, you got to go see somebody, though. And it was this guy, the Golden Goose, the lobbyist for the liquor industry.
Yeah. Mr. Hensley.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so anyway, what we accomplished is pretty amazing because we got the sunset removed off the wetlands fund. So it's been functioning ever since 1986.
Right.
And we made sure it continued beyond 96 when it was due to expire. And then we added 4 cents, and it took 2 sessions of the legislature, 2 years, to get it accomplished. It went through 8 committees. It passed with 1 vote.
Wow.
It passed 50 to 49 in the House. So whenever I see some of the legislators that are still around, I say, hey, you're the reason we have those. There's 50 people that are the reason. But it's protected Virgin Falls, Cummins Falls, Fall Creek Falls, all Radnor Lake properties, local parks all over the place. And if it hadn't been for Mark having a brilliant idea back in 1990, and then him sucking me into it somehow,
we
would not have those funds.
You know, it was interesting because in preparation for today, I went back and looked at some things, and it appeared to me that I may have had the idea, and I think maybe that I can remember meeting with Gerald Dillahay and others and sitting down to try to draft a piece of legislation, and I think I quickly got sideways with an individual whose name I'm not going to mention, and I withdrew from participation as a volunteer. At that point, I was as a lawyer. I was not involved in the lobbying for that.
And I just about killed myself on that.
Yeah. Well,
because it was such an opportunity.
What I remember is that there was a lot of coalition building.
Yes.
In making that happen. And so for maybe the one time all the moons and the stars aligned, and the fish and wildlife people, and the historic preservation people, and the local park and recreation people, and the nature
state
conservancy people, and the state park people all got together. And the beauty part of that was, I mean, the local park and recreation people have access to every mayor in Tennessee. And they have a special way of communicating with their legislatures, don't they?
They do, and that's why I think it succeeded.
Yeah.
I mean, you're exactly right that it took a small army of individuals to make it happen,
right.
And it just barely passed.
Right.
But if it hadn't been for the local parks, knowing every mayor in the state, it would not have happened.
I agree with you.
Now, the partnering organization that I also give a lot of credit to was called then the Environmental Action Fund. And you, before you had to back out because of the individual who will not be named,
right.
You convened us. I don't know if you remember that, but I do.
I do.
We met with the group called the Environmental Action Fund, and it was me and you, and I don't know who the president of the Recreation Parks Association was. I don't think it was you.
I think it was Bob Parker.
I think it might have been.
Yeah.
Anyway, we met with them and we said, okay, what's important for your organization, and they said, well, we need money for state parks. And of course, we were all over that, and we wanted to do that. And
I think Pam Wolf was involved at some point in that.
Mainly, it was John Williams.
Oh, okay.
He was the lobbyist for the Environmental Action Fund.
That's right. He did that before Pam did.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And he knew how to maneuver at the legislature, and I was green as grass, but I had all these contacts in cities and counties. Right. So the two of us really worked on it for 2.5 years. And I hired my sister. I don't know if you remember this part.
No, I don't remember that.
I had a full-time job. I didn't have time to lobby this stuff, so I hired my sister knowing that I could trust her completely to manage our books and workshop registrations and all that.
I see.
So she managed the office while I could lobby, and I registered as a lobbyist, and I had a blast. And I had a new baby at that time. My daughter was born in 89. I can't believe it. But every time it passed a committee, I would go buy a new outfit. There was a mall downtown. It was like my incentive.
The mall where the library is now.
Yeah, exactly. And so every time we passed a new committee, I would go shopping and on my way home, because I knew I was going to be back down there where you have to dress to the nines, you know, you have to dress up like the legislators do. So I'd buy a new outfit to wear. And finally, I got to buy the dress that I got to wear to the governor's signing of the bill.
And of course, that was Ned McWhorter, I believe.
It was. And Tom Hensley, the Golden Goose, the lobbyist, who... a quick story, when I went to see him, I said, we want to add, 4 cents to the real estate transfer fund, which the real estate transfer fund is the fee you pay when you register your deed, when you buy or sell a house in Tennessee. So it grows as our population grows. It's been just fabulous. Back then, each penny generated $1 million. Now each penny generates $3.5 million. So that fund generates $28 million a year, and it's still buying Landmark.
I got online and talked to Gerald Parrish, and he sent me a copy of the most recent report to the legislature that they are required to do. And I think last year it was like $24-25 million.
For local or?
For local.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They save, I think they only award the grants every couple years now. Right, and so they save up some of their funds.
Right.
But the later part of the story is that I got to work as a land trust director, and then
let me go over that in more detail.
Okay.
So you decided to leave the Tennessee Recreation and Parks Association, and you created another organization.
Yes.
Called the Tennessee Parks and Greenways Foundation.
Right.
All right, and that's something that was your concept and you created on your own.
Well. There was a little interim organization in between.
Okay.
What happened is, this is funny, I went to the TRPA board meeting and I said, there's two major things on our agenda. One is, we ought to collect our membership dues once a year instead of every month of the year to make accounting easier.
Right.
Oh, the board debated that, you know, when could we pay? And it's just the nature of individuals. They could get their arms around that. The other thing on the agenda was we should start a statewide system of greenways across the entire state and link all the parks together. State parks, CORE, TVA, TWRA, local parks. And the board said, okay. I mean, it was just like no debate, no discussion. They endorsed it. And so with that resolution, we went to the mayor of Knoxville. We went to the governor's office. We got an organization started called Tennessee Greenways, and I was hired by the Conservation Fund, which was a national nonprofit, to direct that program for 3 years.
Okay.
And then that grew into a merger with a group called the State Parks Foundation that had not succeeded in accomplishing their mission, and they were kind of languishing. And we merged the chairman of that organization. We used to joke that we merged nothing with nothing, because I had no money, no grant, no members, hardly anything, just a big idea. And the State Parks Foundation had not filed their tax return, member terms were expired.
When was the State Parks Foundation set up?
It was set up in about 94.
Okay.
I took over in 97, 98.
Okay.
And the reason that, John Sheehan was the chairman of the board, he went to the governor. I asked him, you know, if you want me to do this, you've got to get the blessing of the governor, because it's changing the direction of the organization. So we merged Tennessee Greenways and Tennessee State Parks Foundation to create the Parks and Greenways Foundation with a mission to conserve Tennessee's natural
treasures.
Which
governor are we speaking about now?
That was Mick Werder still.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
And so, no, I'm sorry. That was Sundquist. He went to Governor Sundquist.
Okay.
And then I got the grant money that I had gotten from the Conservation Fund and through the Lyndhurst Foundation, really, given to the State Parks Foundation. So that was $60,000. And the State Parks Foundation had $28,000. So we started an organization, which is not enough money, really, to start a statewide organization. It was hard. But I inherited a great board of directors, and a lot of the people still engaged, Ann Tidwell, you know, a lot of people you know.
I know many of the people on your board, and they are people that have a long-term commitment to, I mean, John Knoll, for instance, comes to mind as a person that has always wanted to step up, not just in natural conservation, but also in historic preservation.
Yes, and he's been involved, of course, in energy and climate change work, and
right.
Now he's the president of their board.
Okay.
But I was the director for 18 years, and it was just a blast. It was what I always intended to do and wanted to do, which is to save natural treasures.
Well, let's talk about some highlights.
Okay.
What are the highlights as far as you're concerned?
Well, the very first project was one of the best. And it when we got the real estate transfer funds, one of the first projects they funded was they bought 3,000 acres that almost adjoined Fall Creek Falls. And then when I got the Parks and Greenways Foundation started, I was able to buy the connecting piece. And it was 420 acres. And it was right in the middle of the most photographed vista, supposedly, in Tennessee at Milliken's Overlook or Buzzard's Roost.
Okay.
That beautiful view where, you know, there's just blue, blue rings of mountains and no sign of human habitation. And right in the middle of it was 420.
Yeah.
That really was important to connect that 3,000 acres to 17,000 acres.
So why was, to illustrate, why was state government ineffective in acquiring that extra piece of land?
They move at a snail's pace.
Okay.
They can't be creative about making deals. They can't do installment sales. They can't move overnight. They can't move quick enough if things come on the market to make it happen, unless they've just got a landowner that really wants to partner with them.
And so the Parks and Greenways Foundation
purchased it,
gets in there and makes and cuts the deal.
Yep.
Then eventually turns the property over to the state.
Almost always, but every deal's a little different.
Okay.
And our motivation has always been to conserve the natural treasures and not worry too much about the outcome, but
right.
Just go for it if it's the right thing to
but
do.
But ideally, the state would
pay, ideally
would purchase it from you all.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so that you're not losing money in the
exactly
situation.
And for that 420 acres, I think I had to raise like $17,000. And the reason it was so low is because I had a promise from the state. They wanted that land. They asked us to buy it. And so I had to pay for the interest while we paid on a loan that we had to get.
Right.
And I had to pay attorney fees for the attorneys that I hired in closing. And so I was going to Spencer and Pikeville and trying to raise money. And I didn't have a clue how to do it. And it was a good lesson. And it was a great project because it was small, you know.
Well, I know of at least one Tennessee State Park that's been created pretty much out of whole cloth.
Yep.
Based on the activity there of that organization, and that's Cummings Falls is what I'm thinking about.
Yeah.
Tell us about Cummings Falls.
Well, we had a mentor that you know, Mac Pritchard, and I was always calling him and asking him about places, and he took me to Cummings Falls the first time. And it was the eighth largest waterfall in Tennessee, and it was privately held. So it was the largest on the list that was privately held, other than Virgin Falls, which
okay.
we also got to protect.
Okay,
yeah.
Yeah.
But,
that's a whole other story.
That's a whole other, and I've got a bunch of stories. I got 40 of them about.
Okay.
But Cummings Falls, We went to see it, and we met the developer who was proposing 80 riverfront house lots. And he took us out there in his little mule, four-wheeler kind of thing, and he took us down to the top. He said, "See here, I cut back all that undergrowth." He was talking about rhododendrons and hemlocks. and he said, "And my house is going to go right here, kind of like a Frank Lloyd Wright, you know, cantilevered out over the waterfall." I cried.
Yeah.
And he looked at me and he said, "Are you crying?" And I said, "This breaks my heart." I said, "You know, it's going to ruin it." I said, "Would you consider setting your house back, using kind of, you know, and letting us get an architect to come out here and consult with you about how to hide your house?" And he said, "Oh, no, no, you know, I bought it so I could get the greatest view, and I'm going to sell all these lots." Well, the recession hit. So the bright spot in the 2008 recession was that development failed. And so then it was an auction, and this was years after I first met that developer and first saw it. At the same time that was going on, the real estate transfer funds had been eliminated at the state. So I had set up an office in the hallway across from the cafeteria, wearing green every day, and lobbying
at the legislature, lobbying
the legislature to get our funding back, which we succeeded. It had been eliminated for 6 years, and we got the funds back in 2009.
Okay.
Since then, it's purchased another 150,000 acres, $150 million. So these legislative activities are so crucial. But meanwhile, I hired a land conservation director to go to that auction. And fortunately, John Newell and Chuck Womack and some good board members accompanied her. And I was on the phone from the hallway at the Capitol. And we got the winning bid. And at the auction, we had two people step up and loan us $200,000 each, and we got a doctor to loan us $600,000. So we borrowed $1 million, not knowing that the state would be interested. And I've got to tell one quick story about Cummins Falls. Cummins Falls is a dangerous place. It's still really dangerous.
Exactly.
There's been deaths there. And,
exactly.
But it's also a heavenly place, and you know, these places come with risks, of course. But this is a lesson for us all to listen to your subconscious when you are alerted to something or you are awoken in the night with something on your mind. I organized, which we always do at 10 Green, Tennessee Parks and Greenways, a local committee to lobby this to get the state interested in making this state park and also to get the money out of the state to pay back our loans, etc. So we got the mayor and the legislators and the head of the university and the city council and all these important people to agree to come to a committee meeting, and we invited like 800 people to our committee meeting, and we had 200 people show up. So the week of the first committee meeting,
this is up near Crossville, Tennessee.
It's north of Cookeville,
Cookeville,
8 miles.
Cookeville,
The week of the committee meeting, was scheduled for Saturday, and I had lined up all these speakers and people to come. I woke up in the middle of the night on a Wednesday night and couldn't sleep. And I thought, what is bugging me? And what occurred to me is that there was a deck that was cantilevered out over the gorge so you get a good view. And I thought, I've never had an engineer look at that deck. And I got up the next and I made a note and went back to sleep. The next morning I got up and I called Harvey Crouch in Brentwood, who was on our advisory committee, and I said, "Gosh, Harvey, would you please send somebody out there to look at that deck, because I've got 200 people coming to use it on Saturday." He called me back the next day and he said, "Kathleen, I'm surprised it didn't collapse with you standing on it."
Goodness.
That could have been one of the worst natural disasters in Tennessee.
Oh, my goodness.
Or not natural disasters.
Now, when you were describing having a meeting, I thought, well, maybe she's rented out the city hall, or
no,
you were
going
to have it there on the,
yeah,
property.
And we did. We had it there. So I said, "What should we do?" And he said, "You've got to tear it down."
Yeah.
So we had that deck torn down before Saturday. So from now on, if something wakes me in the middle of the night,
that's,
I try to listen and see if it's something that I should... you know, pay attention to.
Just picking some items out of my pea brain of things I know that you've been involved in. One of the most beautiful places in Tennessee is a place called Grassy Cove.
I love Grassy Cove.
And for those that may not know where it is, it's just south of Crossville, Tennessee. And it's an area, as the name implies, it's a cove, but it's underneath the ground, or they call it a karst topography. So we have caves and that sort of thing going on underneath. And it's very lightly populated, still very much rural, beautiful, beautiful place. If I had to name the most beautiful place in Tennessee, it's just as pretty as Cade's Cove in the Smokies.
It is. In my eye.
What's going on in Grassy Cove?
Well, we've protected a bunch of land around it. We need about 10,000 more acres, if you know anybody that has a lot of money. But I want to say, too, Mark has been a contributor to many of these campaigns as a member of the foundation, and I'm so grateful.
Thank you.
And so many other people, of course, have made all these things possible, and I just got to be the lucky person to work on them. But at Grassy Cove, I just want to first say that it is a national natural landmark, and there's only 13 national natural landmarks in Tennessee, and all of them are protected except for Grassy Cove. There's one or two of them that are privately owned, but they're in good hands right now.
This is important because it's where the headwaters of the Sequatchie River.
Exactly. Okay. And the reason that the headwaters emerge with such force is because Grassy Cove is a cove without a river outlet. So it's 3 miles by 8 miles. It's the biggest sinkhole in North America, which is a funny distinction.
Wow.
But it's just beautiful, and all the water that drains off the 1,000-foot-tall mountains that surround the pastoral floor drain water, and all that water seeps into that karst, and then it comes out as a gushing spring on the other side of Bear Den Mountain and Dorton's Knob, and we've got Bear Den Mountain this year.
Oh, my goodness.
So we've got 1,000 acres protected at Bear Den. We got 400 acres at Brady Mountain. We got 500 acres of Black Mountain. Black Mountain looks like a rock garden. It's paradise. It looks like the Black Hills of South Dakota, and it's the midpoint
That's
of the Cumberland Trail.
That's not a place I'm familiar with.
Oh my gosh. Well, it is the jumping off point for the Cumberland Trail, which is 300 miles long. You start there and go in either direction 150 miles. And so on the interstate, you take the Crab Orchard exit, and you can go to the top, and it's a great day hike up at Grassy Cove. And just recently, I went to the far end of Grassy Cove for the first time and hiked across Brady Mountain and then spent the night at Black Mountain. And Black Mountain has a camping area that's wilderness, you know, and stars above, stars below.
Is that a Tennessee State Park area?
It is. Okay. It's part of the Cumberland Trail. So go see it.
Oh, my goodness. Absolutely.
And then all the water that comes out that makes the Sequatchie River comes out at Head of Sequatchie. And we got to buy Head of Sequatchie, and it has 1,000-year-old Native American artwork in it. It has an art gallery of 22 different art pieces that were carved, incised 1,000 years ago.
In the cave.
Okay. And you have to crawl like a alligator to get back there and see it, and it is barred and locked up because it's fragile. But it's been studied by the National Geographic Society, and all manner of interesting things probably happened there because they found hundreds of skulls in the 1800s at the mouth of that cave, and it was a mass burial site.
So what's going on that our listeners might be interested in hearing about that's an active something going on right now that you're working
on? Well, there's lots of I no longer direct the foundation. It's in the good hands of Steve Law, who was my successor there, and he's doing a great job and got projects all over the state that are, you know, interesting land conservation projects, including at Grassy Cove, trying to finish up Bear Den Mountain. But at the legislature, we're trying to get more funding for to protect mainly Tennessee's rivers, and I just want a quick commercial for that. It's called Forever Green Tennessee.
And this was something that y'all did in the legislature that just adjourned.
We did not get any money, but we made so much headway that I think we can get the real estate transfer funds expanded. Now, not adding tax, but taking more from the general fund.
Okay.
So it would not be a tax increase, but if we could get 10 cents more of the real estate, not to be greedy, that'd be $35 million more dollars. We need that to protect another 1,200,000 acres of river banks in Tennessee to protect our precious wildlife and our rivers, our drinking water, our economy, our industry that's water dependent. There's just so many great economic benefits to getting these lands protected.
So and y'all will be back. Of course, the legislature just adjourned, so this same group of people will be coming back next year for their second term.
I'm hoping.
Yeah.
I'm about worn out from directing it, and I've got a new second grandbaby on the way.
Oh my goodness!
So I may not be the coordinator. I'm hoping to recruit the Nature Conservancy or some other entity that'll head it up. But I think it can happen. And if it does, then we can forever green Tennessee, which is the name of the campaign, and set aside enough land for our descendants to, you know, have the same kind of rivers and wildlife that we've enjoyed.
So. Let me just change the pace here just a second. As we talked about the creation of this fund of money to assist local park and recreation agencies, and, you know, when I first started back in 79, 80, there were many, many counties in Tennessee that had no local park and recreation agency whatsoever. I know that's changed.
Yes, and I think because there's this funding, it's driven a lot of that.
Right.
And also, Mark, I think you were involved in this program called the Tennessee Recreation Initiative Program. Did you help with that? That was another bill we passed in the legislature to provide seed money to start new park departments.
That was a program that actually Joyce Hoyle ramrodded. But it came from an idea that we got from the state of Georgia that had a similar program to that, is where the state would give some grant money to create a new department where the local government was not doing that.
That program is still running in Tennessee.
Yeah, and it's important.
It's a good one.
Yeah, I think as you well know, there's a lot of demand on state government to build facilities in state parks, swimming pools, and active recreation things, which are fine things to have, but they tend to be facilities that really ought to be provided by the local governments.
Exactly.
You know, Tennessee has in my view, made some poor choices in funding some projects in some of these rural areas where they could have stepped in and had a local government do the project.
Or private, in the case of golf courses.
Yeah, possibly. Yeah, possibly or not at all. But
right.
So there's been a real change in the nature of local park and recreation services as it's provided by local governments. Have you seen any of the local governments do anything significant in terms of the conservation of the natural heritage?
You know, I really think that maybe public interest has driven that a little bit,
right.
And also the Greenways movement.
Right.
So yes, there are Greenways projects all over the state now, and I attribute a lot of that to the work that you and I started back with the Local Parks Fund.
Right.
Because those funds, we specifically in the bill said that they were designed to fund facilities, including greenways,
right.
Greenway trails. So there's been a lot of, you know, great little riverine parks started, you know, in towns like Sparta, where my mother was from, and it's been very heartening to see.
And not just that a facility was developed, but that a new agency
service
was created.
Right? Sure.
So that,
and we've got such an obesity problem in Tennessee that, man, it's vital to have places for people to play. And that's what those funds have made possible.
I think that's right. Not only do they have the facilities, but they also have the swim lesson programs and the other things that get people involved in recreation. As a way of life. The other part of that is having local recreation agencies is a vital part of the overall economy. So industries that are interested in coming to Tennessee and setting up their factories here or their workplace here, they want something for their people to do.
They want a good quality of life.
Right.
They want amenities like parks, and they are going to need abundant water, which is the important part of what we're up to now.
Exactly. Well, Kathleen, it's been a dream to talk with you. We could probably talk for another hour or more.
Let's spend an hour on Grassy Cove.
well, maybe we should just do a program on Grassy Cove at some point.
I think it'd make a good one. You know, there's the archaeologist over at UT, Jan Simic. He's in love with those Native American paintings. He'd be a good person to talk to.
Well, I'd encourage our listeners to get out and see some of these places that we've talked about. Tennessee's just loaded with them.
Yep.
Thanks, Kathleen.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.